Raisley Funeral Home is located. Why? For well over 100 years, the Raisleys have been helping families around here deal with loss. Not an easy thing to do, but the Raisleys have taken great strides to pass that tradition on from generation to generation. The tradition of providing compassionate and complete services. And now, the fourth generation, Carrie Raisley, has carried on the name while still providing that same Raisley compassion. Carrie Raisley is ready to help you, whether it's pre-need counseling and arrangements or just knowing that she is going to be there when the need for her expertise and service arises. The Edward L. Raisley Funeral Home in the quiet village of Prospect, a choice you won't regret. Call Carrie Raisley today at 865-2442. Let her arrange for you to stop by and discuss your thoughts and needs. That's the Edward L. Raisley Funeral Home in Prospect.
Oh, looks like we got some clouds today with a high just about 61, a low tonight down to 42. It'll be likely on Saturday and Sunday that we see the rain showers. Saturday's high near 57, a low down to 50, and then Sunday a high near 65. Back to some sunshine for Monday. Enjoy it, because Tuesday night, a chance of rain showers again. So 51 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. News time, just about 12:31. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Boy, it's a gloomy day out there, huh? You notice it more, I think, after you've had a couple of sunny, nice days, which we had earlier this week. The foliage looks great in the bright sunshine today. Gloomy from the get-go. Actually, it all moved in shortly before dawn, because when I was coming to work, shortly after 5 this morning, a little sliver of a moon up there was still pretty clear, but by daybreak we had clouded up, and there we are right now. So we make our own sunshine today. A little bit later on today, we're going to be talking about what is a looming crisis in the United States, a shortage of physicians, and it's expected to reach critical stage in the next decade or so. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later with a couple of physicians today, and then we have some other stuff too. But first of all, it's our regular edition of City Hall today, and we have the mayor of the city of Butler with us, Mayor Ben Smith. Mayor, good to see you.
You too, Dave.
And member of Butler City Council, Jeff Smith, also here as well. Jeff, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
We weren't able to talk to you last time because in your capacity as chairperson of the Slippery Rock University Council of Trustees, I think the council was meeting.
Right, I believe we had our trustee meeting.
About a month ago. Yep. How often do they meet, by the way?
We meet quarterly, and I also attend the Board of Governors meetings, so that's another four times a year, so I get the chance to...
Oh, were you at that big powwow at Kutztown within the past couple of weeks? Was that the Board of Governors?
I was there, yep. Yeah. It was a very, very interesting meeting, and, you know, really, really... they really shared a lot about where the system stands today. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that for a second. You don't mind, Mayor?
No, at all.
With Slippery Rock in our county, it's one of the 14 state-owned and operated universities. That's a big deal because, from what I understand at this Board of Governors meeting, there was some back and forth for a couple of days, and then the Board of Governors finally decided to ask for, I think, $100 million from state lawmakers over the next several years for a restructuring of the 14 schools in the state system.
Yeah, the original proposal was to ask for $100 million over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. you know, for one-time investments to do everything, I think, from some demolition, getting rid of some overcapacity to a lot of other things. And during the meeting, Chairperson Shapira said, you know, really, we need more than that. And, you know, I think she was talking north of $300 million over 5 years. And I think it caught some people by surprise, a lot of discussion. And ultimately, the next day, they decided that, you know, let's ask for the 100. I mean, I appreciated what she was trying to do. You know, she knew a lot of work needs done. And as a rule, the legislature doesn't give you more than what you ask for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, there's a number of legislators on the Board of Governors. And I think they sort of held the day that, you know what, let's ask for the 100, because if we go too much, the answer is no out the gate. So,
well, the there is a looming crisis there, because enrollment across the statewide system is down 20% in the last decade. Now, we point out Slippery Rock is an exception there. Slippery Rock's growth has been excellent, and they are within, 10 or 12 students this year, what they had last year. So Slippery Rock's growth is continuing, but that it's the rare exception.
Yeah, there's Slippery Rock in the west and Westchester in the east that are doing really well. But there's probably five schools that over the next 2 to 3 years are going to be in some pretty severe financial straits if something doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I give the new chancellor a lot of credit. He's really, it's a big ship that turns slowly, but he's trying to make some really good changes.
He was just in Slippery Rock yesterday, as a matter of fact.
He was up there yesterday.
Yeah, explaining what happened at this big meeting. Okay, well, it's worth mentioning because Slippery Rock University is a tremendous part of our local economy here. And, you know, it certainly affects the city as well as the rest of the county. Talking about City Hall, Butler City Council met last night. It was their second meeting of the month. I guess council members, Mayor Smith, got a first look at a rough draft of a budget for the coming year of 2020, a rough draft of a spending plan.
Yeah, we were handed that last night. I haven't had a chance to fully peruse it, but we did receive that last night.
Mm-hmm. It's a process, right?
It's just like
it's state government or, well, I can't say federal government because they never seem to approve a budget. They just keep, approving.
And those numbers are all made up anyway.
Yeah, you know, and they get to the deadline with no budget and they approve something for 6 weeks and go on and on.
Right.
But at state level, it's mandated that a balanced budget must be approved. Often runs a little late, but they get one. The city's on a calendar year, right?
Correct.
So you're not end of June or beginning of October, and it's January 1st.
That's right, yep. So we got a first draft, essentially. We'll take back revisions and everything. We may end up having a special meeting at some point in November, December. But essentially at two meetings, we have to introduce it and then vote on it across two meetings. And I think we have to have a 30-day gap in there for public comment and everything else. And we can only change so much between that first reading and the second reading, a certain percentage of the budget overall. So we'll have it, if all goes well, done by the end of the year. Of course, there is the possibility that it could be reopened or continue through the very beginning of next year, but I'm hopeful that it won't be the case.
Does it work in a similar fashion to, I'm familiar with how the county budget process works. The various departments submit proposals as to what they think, you know, they're going to need to operate in the coming year. Is that way in the city too? Do you get proposals from the various departments as to what they think they're going to need?
Yeah, that's the way it works, or at least it's supposed to work. You know, if it's working 100% effectively, every department meets with their department heads and submits their wish list, essentially, for the next year. And then we get it all compiled and consider all the other things that are in place, you have department expenses, obviously, but then you have expenses that don't really fall into a department. So you got to consider those as well. And then we put that all together and talk about it and try to pass it, but as close to balanced as absolutely possible.
In many cases, when you total up the wish list, it's going to be higher than what you're eventually going to spend. That's pretty standard at any level of municipal government.
Yeah, I think that's the way it is with a municipal government or, you know, your home budget or anything else. You want more than you're going to actually be able to afford. But we submitted everything, and of course, you don't submit everything you want, but you do submit a few things that you think maybe won't be a possibility, but we'll see how the budget actually shakes out. Knowing that you're going to have to make some sacrifices here and maybe gain a little somewhere else. But really what, you know, I think every department's doing is, you know, you want to make sure that the employees are taken care of. Obviously, most of them are under a CBA, so they're going to have a built-in wage increase, potentially benefit increase, although that's not usually the case. You know, what do they need? Is it time for new computers? Is it time for a new truck? This year, maybe we don't need a new vehicle for that department because they got one last year. So you just consider those different things and put it together and try to keep it as close to the year before, if not lower than as possible. And of course, that doesn't always shake out right away, but we'll get it shaken out by the time we pass it.
What's the city of Butler budget run these days? Around $8 million? Am I in the ballpark there, give or take?
Yeah, it's getting closer, I think, to... The preliminary one is probably closer to $9 million now, but it's north of $8 million.
A lot of the costs, Councilman Jeff Smith, are fixed for the vast majority of wages for city employees, wages and benefits. There's nothing you can do about that. That's fixed by contract.
Yeah, I mean, they're fixed by contract. Things like utilities, you know, They may vary, but it's not like you can not use your electricity. So it's going to be pretty much there's not a ton of variability in it other than some things like the mayor talked about. You know, do you buy one car? Do you buy a new truck? Do you not buy a new truck? You know, do you pave $200,000 worth of streets or do you pave $100,000? That's where the variability comes in.
It doesn't look like there's going to be any reductions in the number of employees, does it? I mean, we're in pretty good shape in terms of staffing in the police department and the Bureau of Fire.
Yeah, we're fully staffed in both departments, and I don't foresee any layoffs or anything like that in those departments. Especially, you know, we have a lot of contractual obligations that prevent that for the benefit of the employees. But no, I certainly don't see us, you know, choosing to lay off staff as opposed to cut other expenses that were possible, yeah.
We'll take a break at City Hall here today, and we'll be back to talk more with our guests on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn right after these words.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby is not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available. Also, prescription diets, you know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south at Thorncrest Drive. City Hall today, we're pleased to be able to chat with the mayor of the city of Butler. Mayor Ben Smith is here in the studio with us, along with another member of City Council, Councilman Jeff Smith. We talked about the budget. This is the time of the year, I suppose, that you start to lay in supplies of salt and anti-skid. I hate to even mention this, but we know it's coming. Does the city have a place to store that? Can you have like a salt bin or something like that? Jeff?
The street department that has a large bin out on the, I guess, what is that? The
Katanning
on
Street?
On Katanning Street, yeah, right off Katanning Street. They've got a large bin. One of the things that we approved last night was the purchase of, I think, up to 1,000 tons of salt that we did a bid along with Butler Township. Mm-hmm. So we'll be getting some of that from them, as well as the state CoStar program. And it, you know, it was just another example of us working with the township. I mean, it's something that's it's sort of come full circle. You know, there was a time when municipalities, first they bought their own salt, then municipalities started buying it together, then the state came in and offered the big deals of lower cost salt, and now it seems like we're going back around to municipalities working together, mm-hmm. Because the price that we got with the township is actually lower than the state contract.
Mm. Speaking of cooperation with the township, new development since the last time we were able to chat together, and that's increased cooperation for fire protection. Mayor, can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, it's not finalized yet, but it looks like the groundwork is laid.
Yeah, like you said, nothing's finalized, but the volunteer fire department in the township and the city fire department, under the leadership of Chief Swatala, kind of got together over a 6 to 9 month period, did a lot of studies, did some different runs, dispatched different ways, just to try to find out what would be the most suitable thing. And so they've presented a few things to both the township government and city government to really try to streamline a lot of what's happening. Of course, it's not a blight on this community, but it's on the whole country. We have less volunteer firefighters, and less volunteers in general, but less volunteer firefighters than ever before. And so they're looking at creative ways to make sure that the residents are still protected at all times of day, that would partner with the city. And then also, you know, so finding other ways to make it so that the township is helping the city while the city is helping the township, just trying to find ways that we can cooperate. Not quite a merger, not quite, you know, actually making it one fire department, but, you know, working together to accomplish the greater good and make the most economic sense at the same time.
It does make sense. And this lack of volunteer firefighters is really reaching a critical stage. We've had, within Butler County itself, we've had several mergers in the last few years, and Butler Township is one of those areas. I mean, they had five separate fire departments, and then they went down to three. And even now, I can remember from the news story we had a week or so ago about these talks, they're still having problems getting enough volunteers whenever there's a fire in Butler Township somewhere.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. And I mean, fortunately, we have the mutual aid that's already set up so that the city or the VA or, you know, a department that's maybe a little bit further away are going to be there within a few minutes after the township department. And, you know, we have the same thing. If there's something that happens in the city, you know, city firefighters are probably going to get there first, but we're going to soon be backed up by the other municipalities or entities. So we have that mutual aid already in place. But, yeah, there comes a point when you know, if I don't know about you, Dave, but if I'm in bed at 3 a.m. and I'm sound asleep, first of all, I don't hear my phone if it goes off because I just sleep very soundly. But if I do, and it's nothing major, I'm not getting paid. Most people are going to think maybe somebody else can take this one. Mm-hmm. And when you have that attitude enough times, and not again, I respect the volunteer fire department. There's nothing there. I'm not saying I blame them at all. Excuse me, but there comes a point when you just have too few volunteers to cover the calls you have. Yeah. They recognize that. The volunteer fire department was actually the one that came to the administration and said, we need some help here. We want to make this good for the community, and we need a little help.
Somebody asked me about that, you know, well, who's the loser in this deal? And I said, there's no loser. I said, you know, this is mutual benefit to both the Butler Township and Butler City if it works out, you know.
The loser, if it doesn't work out, is the community at large. I mean, yeah. it really, it's just hurting the citizens.
And you look at the incredible cost of fire apparatus and fire equipment these days. I honestly don't know how some of our rural fire departments can do it. You know, there's only so many chicken fries and
right.
bingo games you can have to raise this kind of money.
So. You ever been to one of those gun raffles or the whatever they call them? When they have the
like all day.
It's basically all day, and they raffle off guns, and those people spend a lot of money on 50-50 tickets. I'll tell you. So, but yeah, you're right. It's not enough to pay for a fire truck.
Talking with Councilman Jeff Smith and the mayor of the city of Butler, Ben Smith, visiting with us here on the program today. So we don't know yet whether or not there's going to be any money available for street paving next year. You're hoping to be able to set aside something?
It's in the initial draft right now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we'll, obviously, that's one of the things I hope stays in some capacity, but we need it. We need the paving streets. We really, you know, there were years that went by where it wasn't done, and it wasn't done every year, and it's been a little less in the last couple of years, but we really need to make sure that some of these, I mean, we've got, you know, our streets, we have old streets, even the new streets are in need of a little bit of work, but we have brick streets that, you know, they shift. That's just what they do. That's what brick streets do. They're beautiful to look at, but they're a pain to take care of. So we need, you know, we just need to make sure that we're spending the money where we need to on streets to make sure that, you know, it cuts down on costs for everything when you think about it.
Mayor Ben Smith with us here today, Councilman Jeff Smith. I bumped into an acquaintance of mine earlier this week who was decrying the junk that accumulates on the porches of some homes in the city. He was driving through a couple of neighborhoods, and he asked me, he said, Dave, do you remember the old campaign in the city of Butler, Civic Pride, Help Keep Butler Beautiful? And I had to confess that I don't remember that campaign. It must have been before my time. I do know that every once in a while we have a Neighborhood Pride Award that we mention for a business or a residence. But there are ordinances, right, Mayor, to preclude people from piling junk and sofas and old washing machines and so on their front porch?
That's right. Yeah, we have we definitely have ordinances against that. Specifically, we have ordinances for, I don't remember the exact way it's phrased, but basically having inside furniture outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's definitely ordinances to make sure that is mediated as much as possible.
And but that's to differentiate, you know, if you have porch furniture or something on the front porch, different from an old sofa or
something like that. Yeah. I mean, I understand. Maybe you have a porch and you want to buy a couch and put it on there. That's one thing. But it's the real issue is when people are, you know, they get a new piece of furniture, they just haul the old one out on the porch, and then it's already, you know, kind of dated, and it sits there for years and collects leaves that are falling off the trees.
And then there's a tricycle on top of it.
Right. Those are the kinds of things we're talking about here. Obviously, we want people to be able to have porch furniture and enjoy the outdoors and stuff. But
now people get cited for this, right?
That's correct. Yeah, there are any time that something like this is seen, it's addressed. We usually give people a chance to remediate the problem, to make sure that it's disposed of. This isn't only furniture; it's, you know, garbage or just you know, whatever, an old mattress, you know, something like that.
Junk.
Refrigerators, those kind of things, you know. And so people do get citations for them eventually after they've been given an opportunity to take care of the issue. And then, you know, sometimes people just choose to continue to pay those rather than actually clean it up. Sometimes they don't pay them and they end up going to court over it. But most of the time, most people, if they understand that they're breaking an ordinance and going to be under some kind of discipline, essentially, will, you know, they'll do their best to take care of things.
Problem is, Councilman Jeff Smith, this is kind of contagious sometimes, you know. It spreads.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a certain, I think, a little bit of an attitude in some people in Butler that they're sort of negative about it. You know, they remember how it used to be super vibrant, and it's not quite what it was, so I think they start feeling a little bit down and maybe lose a little bit of that concern to keep it looking nice. I'm here to tell you, if you've lived in other places, Butler's still a pretty great place. So that, you know, I don't agree with that attitude. I mean, I understand it. The one thing about the complaints about when people have, you know, couches on their porch and, you know, the neighbors look out the window and see them and they're upset that it's there. Why doesn't the city do something about this? You know, people need to understand we really don't, you know, we've only got two people really that are dealing with codes enforcement and they're not out on patrol. So as distasteful as it is, generally the way that the city finds out that somebody's got a couch or refrigerator on their front porch is if somebody calls in and reports it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know people don't like to snitch on their neighbors, but, you know, if we're going to really clean this town up, we're all responsible to each other. And if somebody sees something that, you know, doesn't look good, or they think's a violation, they should notify the city office.
The city building and the enforcement officer will be out and take a look and maybe cite those people.
Right. In fact, and we had a group last night, came to city council, a large group that was concerned about their neighborhood, some things that they didn't think were right. And they came as a group. They were very respectful. Lots of times, you know, when you get a mob coming to a council meeting, they tend to get a little wound up. This group was great. They had pictures. They showed it. And, you know, John Evans is probably already has followed up on it today. So I'm not saying everybody should come to city council when they have a neighbor with a couch. Don't wait till that meeting. Just give a call to the city. And, you know, if we all work together, we can get it cleaned up.
Hey, it looks like from my standpoint as one of the premier sidewalk superintendents watching construction work, I love to do that. They're nearing the end of putting in all the new concrete bases for the new streetlights in the city of Butler. It appears to me they're wrapping up anyway, Mayor.
Yeah, they're definitely wrapping up with that portion of it pretty quickly here.
Yep, they've been up one side of Main Street, and they've been coming back down the other side.
That's right, yeah, and they've been great to work with. I haven't worked with them directly, but our city engineer said that they've been phenomenal to work with. They've, you know, done a lot of things that maybe another company wouldn't have done. To help the city, whether it's decision-making or, hey, we found this issue here, how would you like us to address it, rather than just ripping it out and costing the city more money. Mm-hmm. So they've done a great job on taking care of other people's money, essentially. And then what I'm expecting, I think we're still looking at end of December, beginning of January is the hope for those poles to actually come in, and then they'll be installed as soon as possible after that. But
it's a local contractor doing this work, by the way. But
that's right.
Bronder, am I right?
Bronder, yes.
Bronder, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've saved the city some money, huh?
That's right, yeah.
Big job, because all of the electric lines are going to be underground whenever the new streetlight poles are in.
Yeah, the scene across Main Street and downtown, when you look across, is going to be much different because you won't have all the wires and everything hanging. You'll have the poles and, of course, you know, the flags that hang off the poles and the lights, but all the wires that, you know, have to be, trees have to be trimmed because of them or whatever the case, they'll be underground, new and old conduit combined.
I was looking as I drove through Main Street a couple of days ago, and I'm thinking to myself, well, even when they get those new poles in, which will be a job in itself, the job of transferring everything is going to be enormous because the The traffic signals have to be transferred from the old poles, all of the signage, the those big control boxes, the walk buttons, everything has to be transferred to the new poles.
Well, the traffic poles, by and large, are staying in place.
Oh, okay.
There's a project that's maybe a couple years out from the state that looks like it'll potentially address some of those things. But you're right on everything else. Yeah, it's a job I don't envy having to have.
Especially if they try to do it during the cold weather months.
Right, yeah.
I think I'd rather wait till spring to do that.
Well, I hope they don't. That's all. Yeah. But I agree with you.
Well, I'm anxious to see it because not only will it be new streetlights, but there'll be a lower level light. As I understand it, they'll light up the sidewalks too, right?
Yeah. Yep, there'll be new streetlights.
And bollards.
And light that'll come out over the sidewalk, and then we'll have the about 4 foot high bollard lights that'll kind of light the walkway as well. So it'll be nice.
Everything seems to be sailing along pretty smoothly in the city of Butler. Councilman Jeff Smith, that's the way we like it, huh?
It is. We just like things to work well and make progress and not necessarily make headlines.
You know, here in this country, things are so polarized at the federal level. They're so polarized at the state level. And there are a lot of people that think that's the way government always has to work. It's just the opposite, actually.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah, the last 2 years, I think City Council has done a really good job, not just keeping things going, but looking to the future. And I, you know, the mayor and I have talked about it. You know, our goal is 10, 20 years from now, people will say that bunch back in 18 and 19 did a pretty good job getting things ready for us.
One final reminder, be careful, motorists. Trick-or-treat night coming up next week. And in the city of Butler, the residential neighborhoods, man, there's a bunch of kids out.
For sure.
So be careful. Be careful. Thanks, guys, for stopping in today.
It's always,
thank you.
Always good to talk with you. More to come on It's Your Turn. We take a break. Stick around. We'll be back with more right after these words.
Are you looking to buy a house for the first time? At Armco Credit Union, they're known for competitive rates and low fees. But did you know their mortgage specialists will work with you every step of the way to make sure your best interests are served? Call the mortgage department at 724-284-2020 and ask them about their first-time home buyer program that allows a minimum down payment of only 3%. Don't have time to call or visit? Simply apply for a mortgage online, armcocu.com. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity and is federally insured by NCUA.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Folks, you talk about tradition. You realize Miller's Shoes has been in downtown Butler for well over 120 years now? Yeah, that's tradition. That's staying power. Miller's Shoes, your headquarters for shoes for all members of the family. If you're looking for athletic shoes, they've got them for men, women, teens, kids, and they've got all the famous brands, too, right there under one roof. Miller's Shoes has Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, Pro-Pet, and more. Athletic shoes for the whole family. They've also got Rockport shoes and Trotters and Hush Puppies and many other famous name brands as well. Easy Spirit. And they're your local headquarters for America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS. You'll find them for men and women in a variety of styles and colors at Miller's Shoes. You can always count on that great Miller's fit, too. And a friendly smile from the Ciprians. Miller's Shoes, headquarters for shoes for the entire family, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, Miller's Shoes. Miller's Shoes, celebrating 127 years in business now. Hey, don't forget, you know, bad weather's just around the corner. I hate to remind you, but Miller's is also your headquarters for Timberland shoes and boots. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown. Coming up, we're going to be talking about an interesting subject, and that is a growing shortage of physicians here in the United States. The U.S. is facing, it's a real crisis, and it will be a severe shortage in just a few years. We're going to talk about that today and explain the situation with two guests joining us by telephone, forensic pathologist Dr. Bennett Omalu, and also joining us is Dr. William Pinsky. Doctors, nice to have you with us here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We want to talk about the shortage of physicians, and let me speak with Dr. Bennett Omalu first. You're coming from Nigeria, doctor. How and why did you decide to come to the United States to practice medicine?
Well, growing up in Nigeria, I discovered that the United States of America is the best place on earth, is the best society, the best country, the best place for me to be myself, to reaffirm who I am and be the best of myself, get the best education. And in so doing, do good work, do research, and give back to the American society, like many other international medical graduates, giving back to improve healthcare delivery, to uphold and restore the dignity and humanity of each and every American.
I want to talk more about Dr. Omalu in just a moment, but I want to bring Dr. William Pinsky into the conversation. Dr. William Pinsky, MD, is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Educational Commission for Foreign Medical Graduates. Dr. Pinsky, what's the role of the commission in bringing international graduates here to the U.S. for additional training and practice?
We were founded over 60 years ago to be the sole agency that validates and certifies individuals who've graduated from medical schools outside of the United States and Canada and wish to come here to further their education. So we assure the public sure about their identity, validating their medical school transcripts and diplomas, and then enroll them to take the United States Medical Licensing Exam, which is the same exam all graduates of U.S. schools have to take as well. And after they're successful in passing that exam, then we can enroll them to continue on for residency training programs here in the United States. And for those who are then successful getting those programs, the U.S. State Department allows us to be the sponsors for their J-1 visas. 25% of physicians practicing in the United States have gone to medical school outside of the United States and Canada. So it's very important that that we do this certification verification very well, because we really count on those physicians for a good part of our care.
And we'll be doing so in the future, that's for sure. Some of our listeners may have heard us say the name Dr. Bennett Omalu and saying, that name sounds vaguely familiar. Well, let me talk about that for a second. Dr. Omalu was the first to identify, to describe, and to name chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, in high-impact, high-contact sports athletes suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, military veterans, too. And, it was the subject of the feature-length film a couple of years ago, Concussion, starring Will Smith, who portrayed Dr. Omalu. Doctor, I'm sure you saw the film. What did you think of it?
Well, I thought the movie did a phenomenal job in portraying the value and the importance of international medical graduates, which I am. If you watch the movie, you could see that there were some unique cultural attributes and intellectual distinctions that I exhibited because I came from someplace else, that enabled me to think objectively, rely on scientific objectivity without any biases, to come across something of value that has enhanced the life of each and every American.
By the way, portions of that film, as I'm sure you know, were filmed right here in Pittsburgh with Will Smith. So
yes, I was in Pittsburgh for about 3 to 6 months, which is, Pittsburgh is a wonderfully beautiful place. And there are actually many international medical graduates in Pittsburgh at the UPMC. Mm-hmm. So collectively, we are feeling a need. Again, the bottom line is to continue building up this wonderfully great country and to remind all of us that we are all one common family working together as international medical graduates to restore and uphold the dignity and humanity of each and every American.
Yes, Pittsburgh is a real national, international center, for that matter, of teaching hospitals. And we're kind of proud of that here in our area. Dr. Amala, one more question. Can you talk a little bit about the different perspectives that international medical graduates contribute when they come to the U.S.? Can you talk about that, sir?
Yes, because many of us come from different parts of the world, we are typically the top brains, the top minds from wherever we come from. So we come here with very unique, intelligent, and cultural perspectives, which combined together enhance healthcare delivery and enhance every aspect of the American narrative, which can be further confirmed by the ECFMG.
Dr. Pinsky, back to you. There's a couple of reasons why it's important that we continue to have these international medical graduates coming to the U.S. Number one, it helps in our growing shortage of physicians. And number two, these people are darn good doctors, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It is really a difficult process. And if we had more time, I'm sure Dr. Amalu could get into details of that. So the international grads have to have significant resilience to get through this process. And resilience is one of those attributes that is very important for physicians to have. So the care generally provided by international graduates is top-notch, and their willingness to go to underserved areas is so important, whether it's in parts of urban areas like in Pittsburgh or other rural areas of Pennsylvania. They play a very important role. And then those that are special, the superstars like Dr. Amalu, who contribute so much even beyond that.
One final question, Dr. Pinsky. What resources are available to give our listeners more information on what we've been talking about here today?
I direct them to our website, ecfmg.org. There's lots of information there about international medical graduates and what we do, as well as a way to contact us directly for more information.
Good stuff, doctors. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today. Good to talk with you both.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Just a quick note here from the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They're going to be holding a fall bundle drive this Sunday, October 27th. Donations will be accepted from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., The Society of St. Vincent de Paul collection truck will be in front of St. Michael Church on Center Avenue on the south side of Butler. You can take any used items there to donate. Again, that's this Sunday. It's coming Sunday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., a fall bundle drive sponsored by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. Coming up on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR Listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking a little bit about early childhood development, and we have a great guest to talk about that. She is Dr. Vanessa LaPointe, and she is the author of a new book entitled Parenting Right from the Start. Dr. LaPointe, welcome. I'm happy to talk with you today. I'm anxious to talk with you, as a matter of fact.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I suppose most people just intuitively would know that it's a very important period for a child's emotional and psychological development when they're very, very young, babies and toddlers, right?
Well, you would think that most people would know that, and I think that we are doing a good job of getting the word out that the early years do last forever. But there's still this sort of mistaken idea that, oh, they're very young, it doesn't really matter, they'll forget about it. And so we do really need to continue to shine the spotlight on how important those first years of life are.
I understand from your book that there's new scientific research, the latest research that indicates that it's very, very important to have a strong and a stable sense of connection to their parents. What exactly does that mean, Dr. LaPointe?
Yeah, and so we know now that as important as food and water, children need a relationship with at least one big person, adult, in their life who really nurtures and tends to the needs of the child. And the relationship, in terms of its emotional tone, is one that needs to have the child feeling like they can really lean into and trust that big person to do right by them. And we see very literally that translating into how the neural architecture of the brain wires up. So children who have the experience of deeply nurturing relationships with one or two very special big people early on in life actually have brains that are much more capable of allowing them to weather the storms of life as they grow.
Dr. Vanessa LaPointe is a registered psychologist. She's based, by the way, in Canada, British Columbia, out on the Pacific Coast. She's the owner and the operator of the Wishing Star Development Clinic. And she's also the mother of two growing kids. So you know of what you speak, eh, Dr. LaPointe?
I walk it every day, or at least try.
You talked about how important it is for a young child, a baby or a toddler, to lean into at least one grown-up. Are we talking about physically lean in? I've seen some video stories on TV recently about how important it is for a mother or father to actually hold an infant, physically hold them right next to their chest.
That's an excellent question, and it's a little bit of both. There's a physical connection that's very important, but there's also an emotional connection. And it really depends on the age and stage of the child, how they're going to most make sense of the relationship that they have with their big person. And so if we're looking at first, second year of life, we know that physical touch is really, really important. It is the primary mode by which children understand relationship. They make sense of your love for them by you being with them, you holding them, singing to them, them smelling you, tasting you, being with you. And then as the child ages, that relationship can extend more into the emotional realm, and so they hold on to you and make sense of the relationship more through an emotional kind of connectedness. And it's at that point that the leaning in I spoke of becomes more emotional in flavor.
So can babies and toddlers, I mean, are they able to realize this? I'm thinking back to when I was in undergraduate school, Doctor, I took an elective course in child development, believe it or not, and I can remember reading about Jean de Piaget, who had these stages of cognitive development, wherein he postulated that children were not able to grasp certain things until they reached a certain age. So, a long preface to my question, are babies and toddlers able to realize what they're doing, or is this just intuitive, this getting a strong connection?
Yeah, so what Piaget would have been talking about would have had more to do with the outer cortical layers of the brain and how it's growing. And what we're talking about right now actually has to do with what we sometimes refer to as the mammalian brain or the downstairs brain. It's the foundational core of the brain, and it's the first part of the brain to really wire up. And you don't really think down in that part of the brain. You more sort of feel and emote and react in that part of the brain. And so it comes across as looking very instinctual. The newborn infant, for example, as soon as they get their eyes open, they are instinctually wired to scan their environment for another pair of eyes. And as soon as they find another pair of eyes in their environment, they will lock onto those eyes as though they are a lifeline. And indeed, those eyes are a lifeline, for the baby knows somehow from the very first moments of life that their big person is their best bet.
Wow, you explained that so clearly, even for the layperson like me. So where do parents run into trouble? Where are the battlegrounds where problems are most likely to arise for little kids?
You know, there's two kind of primary misconceptions that lead us into a whole bunch of different challenges where things can kind of go off course. And the first is that our children need to be independent, that they need to figure out how to sleep through the night, and they better be doing it by 6 weeks or we're going to have to sleep train them, right? And we feel like we're launching them for their professional careers and their academic career at Harvard by the time they're 3 years old, and we have this sort of race to get them to be independent, when what we know is they really need to be deeply dependent early in life. And then the next thing that happens is that we actually forget that development is a real thing. And so we look at the two-year-old who's tantruming or the three-year-old who doesn't want to share, and we think that they're problem children, that they're presenting with a problematic behavior, when all of those behaviors are actually very developmentally typical, and we want to embrace those behaviors because there's all sorts of rich opportunity for learning and growth and development in those behaviors. So independence is important, dependence is important, independence is not, and development is a real thing. And then we look at things like sleep. And we look at things like feeding. I take on topics in the book like aggression, what to do when the older siblings aren't happy about the arrival of new baby. And we use all of this foundational knowledge about how important dependence is, how important relationship is, how important understanding development is, and I apply it in really practical ways to help parents find their way through those battlegrounds of early childhood.
And if parents don't do the right thing at this very young age, that could lead to problems later in life for these kids about such things as regulating their emotions or developing a sense of identity, correct?
Yeah, and so we always say that early years last forever, and it's not that it's unchangeable. And so if you have parents that are listening right now and they're like, oh no, I think I wrecked my kid, we can always go back in time and change it. But the idea is to gift our children a childhood that they do not have to recover from.
It's my understanding that there are many younger parents, newer parents today who don't realize how important this is. There are actually, parenting guides that don't even talk about this.
Yeah, we had a long sort of stretch in the dominant parenting pop culture where we were focused mostly on the facade, the behavioral outcomes that children were presenting with. And we sort of lost the heart of what it is to raise a human being. And what we're finding, particularly with the advent of sort of science and technology in the last, I would say, about 15 years, where we can literally see the emotional environment of the child driving the neurological connections of their growing brains, we've become incredibly focused on the importance of the early years and the importance of that emotional environment, especially the relationship they have with their special big people.
Okay, so we know that developing a strong and stable sense of connection to parents is crucial for babies and toddlers. I'm interested in, you know, you don't have to go back more than a generation or two, certainly for those of us who are baby boomers, Dr. LaPointe, when, it was pretty much the common thing for at least one parent to be at home most of the time, often the mother. And that really isn't the case anymore. You know, in the vast majority of households, there's two parents working outside the home. Does that make it more difficult to develop this stable sense of connection?
You know, I think it means that we really have to be very focused on how do we do right by our children so that even with all of the pressures of our modern world, we are continuing to provide for their needs. And if you look back historically, we've always raised our children in villages or tribes. There always was a community around the nuclear family that rallied to the cause of raising the child up in the best possible way. And so what we have to do now in our modern world is to be very attuned to that village, to be recreating or backdooring the village, if you will, so that we're welcoming this community and this village into our lives, into our children's lives, and recreating days gone by in our modern times. And so, you know, that is a fact of life for a lot of families, and there's a way to go about ensuring the relationship is well developed with the new caregiver, making sure that those roots are deep, and making sure that you continue to envelop the child in an emotional environment that's really going to work for them.
Dr. Vanessa LaPointe, author of a best-selling previous book, Discipline Without Damage. Is that book still in print, Dr. LaPointe?
It sure is.
And your new one is entitled Parenting Right from the Start, Laying a Healthy Foundation in the Baby and the Toddler Years. Is there a website for your publisher or where folks can find out more about you, Doctor?
Yeah, they can probably just head direct to my website, which is Dr. Vanessa LaPointe, Dr. Vanessa LaPointe with an E on the end, .com, and the book is available. Most places that books are sold, Amazon's a sure thing.
You explain this in very easy-to-understand terms, Dr. LaPointe.
Awesome.
And nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So long now.
Bye-bye.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Here's a pre-planning checklist. Pre-plan your vacation? Check. Pre-plan for retirement? Check. Pre-plan for college expenses? Check. Pre-plan for a funeral? Hold on, you say, I don't want to even think about that now. Think again. Now is really the best time. Before your emotions get in the way of logical and sensitive decisions, make all of these choices now. The funeral service, the choice of caskets, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church service or not, all these decisions must be made, of course, but make them now. Before your emotions get in the way of logical decisions, pre-plan with Thompson Miller. Think about it, and then call us to meet with you to discuss it privately. Call 724-287-3706, 287-3706. Pre-arrangements. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
The Knock Knights wrap up the regular season this Friday night against an old foe, and WISR will be there. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs inviting you to join Dave Bacon and me as Knock travels to Freeport Friday night to wrap up the regular season. We'll have all the action beginning at 6:30 as we talk with head coach Brandon Mowry. 6:45, we're live at Freeport for a 7 o'clock kickoff. Knock football here in 2019, presented in part by Slippery Rock University, Butler County District Attorney Rich Goldinger, Troy Allen Chevrolet and GMC in Slippery Rock, and Troy Allen Buick in Katanning, the law firm of Dillon McCandless, King, Coulter & Graham, Butler Health System, United Plate Glass in Butler, Kelly's Restaurant on Main Street in Saxonburg, Next Tier Bank, Dry Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, Conlon Tarker Attorneys at Law, and the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation of Saxonburg. It's Knock in Freeport this Friday night right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and as always, on the Trib Live High School Sports Network. Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
Show I love you, thinking of